Welcome back to Legend in the Field podcast. I'm your host, Shelby Landmark, and we are in episode number 3 of our podcast series. And I'm pretty excited to have this next guest with us because him and I work very closely. Sometimes I like to call him my boss, and sometimes he calls me his boss. So it really just depends on the project we're working on. But I'm excited to introduce and welcome Stephen Ressler. And today we're going to kind of talk about your operation and your decisions that you make on that operation. So, Stephen, no further ado, hello.
Hello. It's great to be on here today with you, Shelby.
Yeah, we're great to have you. And I kind of just like to have you start by telling us who you are. What's your legend story?
Yeah, so no, thank you for that. And so been with Legend 13 years. I just had my work anniversary, they would say, back here in June. So just a little bit about myself. Grew up and live in Owatonna, Minnesota, so just south of Twin Cities, an hour here. Grew up on a farm, livestock, grew up on dairy and hogs. We got some beef cattle and still hogs, fair to finish yet. And then also about 500 acres of row crop that we run here. So married to my wife, Jill. I got 3 daughters, Ava, Addison, and Josie. They're all active on the farm and helping out. So we stay busy with that and all the activities that they're in. On the work side, I went to school in Brookings, South Dakota State. Go Jackrabbits there.
You bet.
And can't beat them, right? And from there, kind of went into the world of retail, got out of college and worked at our local co-op here, just south of where we farm and grew up. Did that for 3-4 years and really liked it. I learned a tremendous amount of knowledge and owe a lot to what I learned there and in my time there, just between FERT, CAM, and scouting and the crop side and the seed side. And then came to Legend. Was looking at our first daughter Ava and was looking to slow down, which is a lie we all tell ourselves when we're in retail, and got into the seed side here and really, really liked it. Started out as an agronomist for Legend. So I've had a few different hats within Legend over the 13 years, but started out as an agronomist covering, kind of southern Minnesota and northeast Iowa. And from there, kind of managed a sales team for a few years in Minnesota and then kind of back into the agronomy side, a lead agronomist and current role product manager. And I think it's 4 for sure, maybe going on the 5th year being product manager for Legend Seeds. Really, really enjoy this role on the product side of kind of product procurement. I always say, we do some in-house research and observations as well, but really working with our genetic suppliers and trait providers on what's coming in the industry and what's available for the next year on the product side that we'll talk a little bit more about today here.
Yeah. And so, like I said before, you and I worked directly for a few years now, and myself in a few different roles. But as the product manager, you've kind of had hands in all different aspects of the industry so far, just working at Legend Seeds, but with your knowledge you've had in your previous careers as well. But here as a product manager, you kind of can see firsthand how some challenges evolve from year to year. And when we say challenges, you can kind of get into a little bit more of what those are, but what are the most common issues that you see operations, dealers, growers face, and how does that influence your choices as the product manager for Legend?
Yeah, so there's like anything, and we're directly tied to farming, right? Everything that we do is directly tied to the farming operation and what the farmer is going to need. And like on our side, the biggest challenges is trying to accurately and responsibly predict what those challenges for the farmers are going to be a year out, right? And hopefully securing and bringing the right products in on the selection side that are going to give them what they need for the challenges that they might have. And, in those challenges on the farmer side, so, we have our set of challenges on the seed side, but they are, like I said, they're directly aligned or linked to what the farmer's challenges are going to be facing. And right now, not to hide around it or beat around it. It's just the economics of farming right now, right? We have a depressed market, so to offer products that maybe have a lower cost of goods or lower price point, whether it's conventional or what trait package they may have on them, there's that side of it right now today, right? That's one facing the farmers, but yet we as always, the agronomic soundness of the product and the merit of the product on the yield side has to be paramount always. You know, we got to bring products that are going to be the best for every environment that we have, and we can expound on that here in a little bit. But you know, bring the agronomics, bring the yield. That has to be first and foremost. But then it's, you know, too, it's just the changing times of weather, you know, the weather we're in, and it's, you know, it's kind of odd this year. And talking to some other people in South Dakota, and just today, right? I mean, you guys have had some rain there. We've had rain here today. You know, we've had ample moisture this year. Other years, though, we came off the last 2 years or three, four in some areas of drought, right? So trying to have products picked and secured that can handle, you know, maybe more of a droughty climate. Now we're, like I said, we're not in that today. That can change yet. And then insect side, right? You know, whether what the insect pressures are. A few years ago, we kind of had more of an uptick of rootworm, you know, cases in our trade area. So trying to stay ahead of that and make sure we have the latest and greatest products with rootworm control on them. Tar spot's been a huge one, you know, to the east and in expanding north and west. So there's all these challenges on the agronomic side and on the financial side, right, that we got to try and balance that into how we do our selection process and how we bring products forward so that we can cover all those bases for the producer. You know, in the end of the day, the farmer that's planting the seed, you know, we rely on our dealers, but then at the end of the day, the farmers that are writing the check at the end of the day and putting it in the ground, we got to be wholly in tune with what they need and what they need to succeed with on their farm and what challenges they face.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of rolls into the topic too of, I mean, every farmer, every grower, everybody who owns a small business, they're very protective of their decisions. And that's why those decisions can kind of be very scary at times. I mean, we've been farming now back here for almost five years, and it's still scary every single year trying to make those decisions, trying to understand, well, here's what we can predict what could be happening next year, but obviously we can't predict that it's going to rain perfectly, you know, every week and then have great GDUs for some growing time in the summer. So it is scary, but when you have a company like Legend Seeds, and we call ourselves nationally independent, can you explain, kind of unpack what that means for growers and how it differentiates us from other seed companies to help with those scary decisions?
Yeah, no, you're right. And like I said, I mean, you know, whether it's your farming operation and ours here at home too, and then how we correlate that into work. I mean, it's number one thing is, right, we don't have to make all those decisions on our own, even though as farmers, we are very independent thinking a lot of times. It's in today's age, and it's always been that way, but it's probably even more so today. It's like, you know, it's who we surround ourselves by, whether it's, you know, your seed salesman, your agronomist, you know, somebody, you know, another farmer or neighbor, right? You know, as whether it's just a mentor or somebody you bounce things off and can have kind of some of those open conversations with. And that's one of the things that we strive to do within Legend, you know, to be that sounding board or that trusted partner that can help bring some of that advice or just be somebody there to talk through things and help make some of those decisions and take some of the pain out of it or fear away from it. You know, and to your point, you know, we say, you know, we're a nationally focused, but an independent company, right? You know, what that kind of means is, you know, we try and to help with some of the challenges and those things that we face, right? We try and look at a broad scope, right? You know, we're focused in the core seven states, you know, of the Dakotas, Nebraska, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, you know, and then we get into some of the fringes around there in Iowa, you know, but we're expanding farther than that, right? So, I mean, we have some opportunities that have come along, you know, whether DFA or other distributorships that now, I mean, we're basically going coast to coast, right? In some regards of we're in New York, we're coming across Pennsylvania and into Michigan and not really into the I states, but then also going west, Montana, you know, Wyoming, all the way out to the PNW, right? So it helps broaden our scope and horizon as far as the people that we interact with and communicate with, but yet can bring it back to that independent, locally focused decision. And that's one thing I always tell people, everything that we do is solely focused around the farm, right? It can be a lot to handle at times as far as trying to you know, you can't be everything to everyone, but yet you're trying to really isolate products that are going to be a little bit more niche than maybe some others would or are willing to look at or manage. One, because we feel and we have proven that we can manage that side of it, of products that are more of a niche for an area. But again, we have that wide scope or wide berth of view of what's going on nationally. But yet we can bring it down to, okay, this product's going to fit this geography. You know, I mean, we've had before in the past, you know, for reference, 4 95-day products, right? Well, it's because this one fits everywhere, but this one fits specifically here, and this one specifically fits out west, and this one has kind of a fit in between, right? And they all kind of interact with each other or complement each other in certain ways. So that's kind of what we mean by that, is just that broad focus or viewpoint we have of being able to interact with a lot of things on a national level and at a high level, but be able to bring that focus and that knowledge and back to a local base.
Absolutely. And so to kind of go in and not just tooting our own horn, but even just any operation, can you give just a little bit of advice on how to hone in on exactly what you should be looking for when you are trying to go through your seed selection? What are some of the questions you should be asking? What are some of the, you know, talking about trade packages, kind of, you know, how do you navigate through those questions and really, really selecting the right seed for your specific area or your specific acre? Because, I mean, when you really think about it and you look, and even if you see how spotty rain showers can be, I mean, that's just exactly how much the soil can change from even just less than a mile from each field, you know, kind of selecting the right traits. But how can you give a little bit of advice on how those decisions can be made?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And that's a loaded question, right? There's a lot of stuff there. thanks, Shelby.
You're welcome.
No, so I mean, and I guess let's break that down a little bit or compartmentalize it a little bit. You know, I mean, you know, when you ask what questions should be, I mean, one question, I mean, as a grower, if you're the grower, you're the one purchasing the seed, never hurts just to slow down and ask the questions and say, okay, truly, because there's so many products out there, right?
Yep.
So many different trade packages, you know, and you know, we get into kind of the, you know, maybe the mainstays, right? Let's say of a lot of people know, just because they were out first maybe and there's more brand recognition, what a Double Pro is, what a Smart Stacks is, what a Duracade is. But we get into, you know, we go through the, you know, the Bayer side of things, and that's the ability, we have the ability to work with all of them, right? But you look at all the different trade packages Bayer has, VT2, VT4, Smart Stacks Pro, and on down the line. Syngenta, right? You know, you have your Duracade, you have your VIP 3110s, 3010, the old 3110s, but the AgriSure above, the AAs. There's a whole host of them, right? Corteva genetics and traits. You have your Chrome and Vore seeds and Power Cores now, and you have the old AcreMax. But there's so many differences there, and we have resources available, but there's so many differences there as far as what insects they control and do have activity on, right? We get into Wisconsin, especially in towards the eastern side. There's certain ones that, you know, certain pests, you know, black cutworm and other things that we have to have. We've got to make sure we can cover them. Same as we get to the west, there's certain stuff, right? So my point is, as a producer, it's okay to slow us down on the seed side and say, hey, really walk me through this so I make darn sure I understand, I know what I'm getting, and that these are the pests that I've had issues with, or, okay, I'm going to be on rotated ground so I can get by with X. I can get a buy with just an above ground trait or maybe a conventional trait, or no, I've been on rotated ground, but we had some bad volunteer corn last year because of a wind event, you know, and I want to make sure that we still have some protection there for rootworm or below ground traits, or I've had extended diapause, right? So like, it's okay to slow us down and just really dig into saying, okay, you talk about all these traits really fast. You know, maybe me as a farmer, I don't work, you know, live and breathe it every day. Just walk me through that so I know exactly what I'm getting and that it's going to cover what I need, or that the expectations are set clearly, right? I mean, it like everything in life, right? It goes back to communication and setting clear expectations. And I guess that'd be, that's just the one thing, right? I mean, just it's okay to slow us down and go through that. So it's really clear up front what those things are and how they're going to impact you on your farming operations. So we don't, because like you said, you know, we only, I think we've all maybe have heard it, you know, we only have, the average farmer has 35-ish opportunities to plant a crop, right? So every year you make management decisions kind of based off what you've learned the last years ahead of it, right? So we want to get it right as many times as we can. We don't want to go, oh boy, we didn't get it right this year, we'll try again next year. I mean, that happens, but let's avoid as much as we can by asking the questions and just slowing us down, you know?
Yeah.
That's one of the big things.
Yeah. So some of that, just to kind of piggyback off of that for a question, because like we already said, every operation is a little bit different. Your farm kind of focuses on a hog, being a hog operation. My previous life, we don't have cattle out here anymore, but back then, in when I was growing up and on the farm, a lot of our acres were cut for silage. So everybody has different reasons of why they farm and what they have to produce to support another side of their farm for livestock, for example. So can you kind of go along those lines of really getting onto our dairy and livestock? Because we've started to push really honing in on some of those products specifically to really give those silage producers or those livestock producers, you know, a better understanding too of those products.
Yeah, no, and that's a good point, Shelby. And that's always the fun part, like when I get to go on and do especially a new farm or any farm,
yeah.
For that matter, but especially a new one, you're right. It's because you're 100% right. It's all what fits that farm, right? There's no, I mean, yes, sometimes maybe you can say, well, the row crop guys, and I'm not lumping them into a bucket, but well, it's still not a cookie cutter, right? Because these are our tillage practices. These are our harvest practices. Maybe we custom hire the combining done and mm-hmm. I'm first on the list or I'm last on the list, right? You know, what are those, all those little things we got to figure out. And you get into dairy and livestock side, it's no different, right? Am I chopping my own silage? Am I custom harvesting it? And they're going to come in and they're going to cut silage in a day or two and be done. So I need it to fit this window as far as moisture and maturity. Or we're cutting our own and it's a 10-day process, right? And I got to make sure that I have silage varieties that I can get cut along the way that are still going to be optimal moisture, right? Depending on what the weather is going to do. So there's all these things that we got to fold into. I mean, and anybody that's out there farming knows this, but that's how we can hopefully help and bring that to the table to say, you know, let us be part of the operation and decision making, and then let's really fine tune this so we maximize everything that we do. But no, to your point, I mean, the dairy and livestock side has gotten to be a huge focus for us, not just because of the DFA side that we're starting to work with, but beyond that, just the amount of cattle present in our trade area, right? I mean, whether it's the dairy side or cattle feeders or cow calf guy, right? And everything in between. So that's become a main focus for us on that side of silage and feedability, the nutrition side of it. You know, I was telling a gentleman yesterday, you know, it's always been, predominantly in the world, you know, there's some silage specific stuff, right? You know, that is truly for silage, whether it's the old leafy floweries or BMRs, you know, you name it, right? But then there's always been kind of, they're dual purpose, right? They're really, really good grain, but they make good silage too. And a lot of us have kind of started to, as on our selection side, you know, like Jake Anderley and I work with it on our selection side, we've kind of said, let's flip flop that, right? Let's look at the stuff that we feel and one, through the visual side of it, two, knowing the genetics behind it and how they interact and our history with some of those genetics on some of the pedigrees. And then thirdly, backing it up with the actual data of the test, let's flip flop and say, which ones first make really darn good silage and feed, but they're still good grain, right?
Yeah.
Not going to disappoint us on the grain side, but let's just flip-flop that decision-making process. And that's where, you know, if you look in our product guide or website, you know, it's going to say silage first, right? Because they're excellent grain and there's probably still more today sold for grain than there is silage, but they have the focus. So when we go into that dairy, we can maximize output, right?
Yep.
The silage has got to be there, but in the end of the day for the dairyman, it counts what's in the bulk tank, whether it's in volume of milk or components, right? Because that's what they're getting paid on. They're getting paid on volume, but also the components. So the butter fat and all the components that go with it. If it's the cow-calf guy or feeder guy, same deal, right? It's what's going to maximize my output. What am I going to get the most of when those cattle come to the feed bunk to be the most efficient at the feed bunk as they can on their feed conversion, right? And days on feed. So that's kind of been our look at that, just flipping that around. And that, and we tag that with a bunch of our biologicals, and I'm not trying to steer down a rabbit hole. What we found with a lot of it, though, when we double those up, that layer effect, now all of a sudden we further increase or maximize the potential of those genetics, one, from a tonnage standpoint, but two, from a feed quality standpoint. And that's been kind of the fun thing to see the last couple of years of how when we layer them, you know, we get an much larger increase or effective, you know, or it gets exponential, right, of our quality then. So,
yeah. And that's just one of the factors and one of the ways that we've kind of been changing I shouldn't say changing, but it is change, but you know, just kind of ramping up what we can offer. And that kind of brings me to the next point of being independent, being a locally owned business as Legend Seeds, but we're also becoming nationally independent. And how can we as a company, as a team, respond faster, more effectively to changes in the market because we have those opportunities? And just to kind of piggyback off of what we just discussed on the silage part, I know a few years ago, I attended, I believe it was a Corteva plot day, and we were able to see some interesting new things coming out. And one of them being some short stature corn that was potentially going to be pushed out to being a silage corn. So there's just new things that they're trying. Not saying there's something out there for right now that they're pushing, but it's just all these companies are trying new things, and we have the opportunity to go out and see those things. So can you just kind of give us a little bit of a wrap up of how we can effectively respond to the changes that are coming in the market and then bring that down to our consumer and to our customers?
Yeah. So many loaded questions. yeah, it's so... To, you know, kind of to what we've said already, right? I mean, it's just one. So the main thing is being an independent company and having the ability to work with everybody, right? There's an always, you know, I kind of put them into two buckets, right? You know, so you have your trait providers and then your genetic providers. And not a secret, right? Your trait providers are the main three, you know, Bayer, Syngenta, and then Corteva. They're the creators of traits. Those traits are then licensed out to multiple genetic companies, right? And we work with all of them. Now, does a large portion of our portfolio or seed offering come from a few? It does, but we're able to look at all of them and cherry pick through them, right? So what that means is we're connected with everybody, so we stay up to date and in tune with everybody. So when things are coming down the pipe or new to the industry, you know, we're at conferences this summer, you know, and we're looking out, you know, there's a lot of new stuff coming, right? And that could be a whole nother podcast of just what's in the pipeline.
Yeah.
But there's stuff for 26, 27, 28. There's a lot of stuff though we're looking at that's 2030, right? Which isn't that far away.
Yep.
You know, if we're talking 5-6 years down the road, probably some of it's more. I mean, it's, you know, when people put stuff into the pipeline, they always have they're being a little presumptuous of that things are going to get done faster, right? And sometimes because of regulatory and approvals, things take a little bit longer, but things are in the queue to be ready by that time, right? If everything else falls in place. So things are coming down the line. How that makes us be able to respond faster is we're able to see what's coming down the pipe. We're able to work with our suppliers and our reps for these companies and say, okay, you know, same as we talk with, you know, or you as farmers talk with the seed salesman or agronomist to say, okay, here's my goals and where I want to get to and what I want to do on my farm. It's the same with our reps, right? We're saying, okay, here's where we are today. Here's where we want to be in 2 to 3 years. And here's where we want to be in 5 years, right?
Yeah.
So they understand our goals and how they need to align with us. And we're able to see what's coming. And being an independent company, we can react fast. And how it's simply because we don't have as much red tape to go through, right? And that's good and bad some days, because some days it's maybe we should have thought a little farther and harder on some of these things instead of just getting, you know, caught up in the shiny and the new and saying, yep, we're going to jump into that head first. But it does allow us to do that, right? You know, we have a good selection team. We have a good executive team, and just one, and just in bouncing things off some of our key dealers, you know, all of our staff, right? And saying, hey, what do you think about this? Or if you see a red flag, you know, what, you know, give us a heads up too of what you think. But we're able to, one, we're able to talk right to, you know, our head people in Legend aren't that far away from the farmer, right? Or the dealer and the people in the field. So our ability to have communication daily or directly with them is very doable and happens. Again, it's a small group. We're not a big company. So it's, you know, we don't have to go through a lot of red tape and administration to be able to get things done.
Yep.
And the key part with that is our suppliers recognize and see that, right? So I'm not saying that we have special stuff that nobody else ever gets to see, but I feel as product manager, our suppliers and reps see that, and they know that we'll move aggressively and fast. And so our feeling is that we get to, they'll bring stuff to us and say, hey, we know that you're going to be aggressive and fast and get this to market or be able to get it out and test it in a real world situation. You should look at this, right? Here's what's coming down the pipe. You guys need to look at this because we know you're going to be aggressive on it and move it right away. So I think because of our reputation with our, in the countryside, but also our reputation with our suppliers, whether it's genetics, traits, you name it, you know, we're able to move fast on that. And again, sometimes, more times it's good than not, right? We learn from it, but again, same deal. We're able to learn fast, and we're able to shift gears fast if we need to on the fly. And that's just one of the things. Because of the size of company we are, we're able to be nimble. A lot of us have been in the industry long enough now where it gives us pretty good experience. And again, our suppliers are a true partner. I was on the phone with one of them yesterday, and it's one of the nationals, and it's a true partnership. And I don't think everybody can say that. We're at a size and scale within Legend, you know, based on our footprint, but the volume that we handle, that allows us some of those things that maybe other ones don't. And then that's not saying anything negative about anybody else. It's just because I can only speak to ours of how they interact with us. But it's a true partnership. And when it is like that, it gives us that ability to respond fast and get to market faster with some things.
Absolutely. And that just, I mean, holds it out to the main topic of this conversation today, between your operation. Those are your decisions. We as a company, as Legend Seeds, as our account managers, as our agronomists, as our marketing team, we're all going to respect your operation because we ourselves are a part of it too. We know how it feels. We know how those decisions are made, and how, like you already said earlier, we don't like hearing what my dad always used to say, the shouldas. I should have done this. Well, we should have planted a longer day hybrid because it's not drying down, or we should have done this. I mean, or a shorter day, excuse me. But regardless, we will respect you. We respect your operation, your decision, your farm, your business as a dealer. And we just respect everyone, all of the farmers across the whole United States. And like you said before, we're really expanding to being almost a coast to coast company, but we're still going to act like we're in DeSmet, South Dakota, more or less. So thank you, Steve, for joining me today. I know it's been a good conversation. We will probably have you on again, and maybe we'll go more into depth on some traits and some products later on here, and once we get closer to making that decision. But any other, is there a way that anybody can get in contact with you if they do have questions?
Yeah, no, feel free to reach out. My number is 507-456-7746. Always welcome to talking to anybody. Anybody that's taking me on sales calls probably say I talk too much and I get into the ditch with farmers and that, because it's just fun. And it's one of the coolest things about our job is just to learn about other people's farming operations, right? I want to learn just as much when I'm out with a farmer as hopefully I can instill into them too, and that from our side. But no, definitely get a hold or reach out, go to the website, find my email. It's just sressler, R-E-S-L-E-R at legendseedsplural.net. So, but yeah, feel free. And Shelby, I hope I can do this again. Hopefully we didn't derail too bad today, where you'll feel you can invite me back on, because I like doing this kind of stuff. So no, thank you for the time today.
Absolutely. Well, and for you listening, we will hopefully see you out in the field. And thanks for listening to Legend in the Field.